You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Today is Thursday, March 8th, and I'm your host, Lucas Han. You can find me on Twitter at Lucas J. Han, and you can read my articles at ClipsNation.com, as well as follow along on Twitter at ClipsNationSBN. So we're back in action today after a snowy Wednesday yesterday in Queens, New York. And what we're going to do in this show is we're going to have kind of a quick show. We're going to talk about the Clippers' loss to the New Orleans Pelicans on Tuesday. And then we'll take our daily look around the NBA, checking in on the Western Conference playoff race, as well as keeping tabs on where Detroit sits in the Eastern Conference so that we know what draft pick the Clippers will be getting from the Pistons this June. So make sure you listen to that, but also come back to the show tomorrow for a great in-depth conversation with Chris Manning of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast and FearTheStore.com, where we'll preview Clippers-Cavaliers on Friday night, talk about both teams' trajectories here in the latter portion of the 2017-2018 season, and then share our thoughts on teams around the league and the same kind of playoff races that we've been talking about for weeks now. So first, let's get into this loss against the New Orleans Pelicans. This was an underwhelming performance for the Clippers in what was a very, very big, important game. And I think that a lot of fans were disappointed and right to be disappointed by the team's performance in this game. The first thing was they just didn't come out with a ton of intensity on either end from the beginning, but especially defensively. They gave up 67 points in the first half. And, you know, I think at halftime the Clippers were down by 15. And what I wrote on Twitter was Anthony Davis played 15 of the 24 first half minutes, and the Clippers lost those minutes by 8, which is not great, but not the worst thing in the world either. It's not crippling to lose the 15 minutes that Anthony Davis plays by 8 points. The reason the Clippers were in such a bad spot going into the second half was because the 9 minutes that Anthony Davis didn't play, a number which the Clippers frankly got lucky because it got inflated by Davis missing a chunk of the second quarter after bruising his ribs in a collision with DeAndre Jordan. The 9 minutes that Anthony Davis didn't play, the Clippers lost by 7 points. Look at this New Orleans Pelicans roster. Etuan Moore, Emeka Okafor, washed up Rajon Rondo, Drew Holiday, Mirotic, Darius Mill, like Ian Clark. This is not a team that you can lose to in those minutes. In those minutes when Anthony Davis isn't on the floor, you have to crush them. You have to force him to play 42 minutes so that he'll be gassed at the end of the game. And then teams, night in, night out, have to force him to play those minutes every night so that the Pelicans can't sustain their level of success going into the end of the season. But, I mean, Drew Holiday is I think, the only legitimately good above replacement level player on the team. Mirotic is, he can get hot, he can score, but he's iffy all around. And the rest of the guys are filling, you know, some of them are perfectly fine rotation caliber NBA guys. I'm not saying they're bad players, but they're not guys who should be beating you in stretches when Anthony Davis is off the floor. And especially that stretch at the end of the second quarter where Davis went out and then the Pelicans responded with a run just killed the Clippers. And then I think the Clippers frankly did a bad job on Anthony Davis all night. And now Anthony Davis is phenomenally, phenomenally talented. So I'm not saying that the Clippers, that there's any scheme that you can put out there that you're going to shut him down and hold him to 12 points on 4 of 16 shooting. That's just not, it's not possible with how the Pelicans play and with how good Anthony Davis is. But it seems to me before the game that the obvious matchup for Anthony Davis is DeAndre Jordan. Like, it just makes sense that you would put DeAndre Jordan on Anthony Davis. And if Davis is playing center with Mirotic at power forward, then you can easily put Tobias Harris on Mirotic. That's a fine matchup. But the Pelicans start a little bit bigger. They play Emeka Okafor at center, and they put Anthony Davis at power forward to kind of make up for the loss of DeMarcus Cousins for the rest of the season due to injury. So I think the obvious solution is you start Montrezl Harrell, you let Montrezl guard Emeka, and you let DeAndre guard Anthony Davis. I mean, I think this is just what it's what you have to do. You have to put DeAndre on Anthony Davis. And if you're not going to put DeAndre on Anthony Davis, you have to send help. You have to send a double team. And not just help when Anthony Davis drives, but you have to aggressively double team him and force the ball out of his hands and force guys like Etuan Moore and Rajon Rondo to beat you. Now, at times in this game, they did. Etuan Moore, 4 of 10 for 10 points. Rajon Rondo hit 3 of 5 threes, which is just kind of fluky and you have to live with it. But force them to beat you that way. Don't let Anthony Davis have 41 points on 17 of 31 shooting. I just don't think that you can let the Pelicans beat you in this way with the way their roster is composed. You have to force the other guys to beat you. So I wasn't a big fan of the scheme that the Clippers employed in this game. And hopefully I don't know off the top of my head if they play the Pelicans again this season, but if they end up meeting the Pelicans in the playoffs even, I hope that they do something a little bit different. The Clippers were, for the second game in a row, kind of disadvantaged by three-point shooting, which, you know, there's a lot of noise there. It's a lot of randomness. It's not always necessarily something you can control, whether those shots fall in or not. The Pelicans, 13 of 30, 43%. The Clippers, 7 of 27, 26%. So the Pelicans started off really hot, cooled a little bit as the game went on. Clippers really never got going, and if they have a decent shooting game, they probably score enough points to win this game. Tobias Harris, 3 of 10 from deep. Tay Dosic, 1 of 5. Rivers, 1 of 4. Lou Williams, 2 of 7. You know, those are guys who you would expect to hit more shots than they hit. And then I think the last, one note on Lou Williams is that this was kind of his fourth game in a row where he's struggled with his efficiency offensively, kind of taking some questionable shots. The big thing is the Clippers lose this game by 5 points. Lou Williams misses 6 free throws, including 2 at the very end when the Clippers were down 3 with the ball. New Orleans fouled so that the Clippers couldn't get a 3-pointer off. So ideally what you do is you go make both free throws and then you foul, and hopefully New Orleans misses one of theirs and now you have the ball back down 2 and they're not going to foul you and you have a shot to tie the game. Lou Williams gets fouled down 3 and walks up to the line and misses both free throws, and that's basically the game. The last thing is that the Clippers just, they really only have 7.5, I think, NBA players right now. Obviously DeAndre, Milos, Austin, Tobias, Montrez, Lou, or no, excuse me, they have 6.5 NBA players. That's even worse, actually. They have 6.5 NBA players. So, and Milos even is shaky at times within that. But 6.5 NBA players, I mean, Sean Kilpatrick, I just don't think is going to really contribute to this team on this 10-day contract. Sam Decker has had a whole season to show us that he's not capable of contributing at the NBA level, and Wesley Johnson has had a decade to show us that he's not capable of contributing at the NBA level. So really, the Clippers have, outside of their core 6 guys, which I think it's safe to lump Montrezl Harrell into that core group now, especially phenomenal in this game against New Orleans, by the way, 26 points and 8 rebounds, playing a lot of minutes alongside DeAndre Jordan when Wesley Johnson was really struggling. Wesley started the game and only played 7 minutes, which kind of shows how out of favor he's fallen. But I think Thornwell was impressive in this game. You know, something that I talked about in the past, him just dribbling with purpose, putting the ball on the floor and going somewhere. And then just, you know, the rebounds, the athleticism, he was involving himself in every play defensively and making a big impact on that end. He's a little bit shaky on the offensive end. You know, sometimes the offense breaks down because you can't really swing the ball to him on the wing and expect him to hit an open shot. But I think he's definitely at least worthy of minutes with the roster composition right now. You can't play 6 guys. This isn't college basketball where you play twice a week and 30 games a year. You play 3 or 4 games a week. You play 82 games a year. You need, and it's 48 minute games instead of 40. You need to go 9 deep basically in the NBA. The Clippers right now only have 7 guys who they can trust. In this game, they played 14 minutes total to guys 8, 9, and 10, being Wesley Johnson, Sam Decker, and Sean Kilpatrick. So they basically played 7 guys. There's no way that you can get by playing only 6, but you would like to at least have that 8th guy, and that 8th guy, of course, would be Tyrone Wallace, who the front office has the control to unilaterally convert to a rest-of-season contract. They don't need him to agree to anything, but they're just trying to strong-arm him into signing a long-term deal that's not in his interest, and the Clippers are suffering because of it. You know, I said before that I didn't think that decision had really cost the Clippers yet, insofar as I think they lose to the Rockets either way, and then they ended up beating the Knicks and the Nets, even though they struggled a little bit against Brooklyn. But do I think the Clippers win this game against New Orleans if Tyrone Wallace plays? I'm not going to definitively say that he makes the difference, but I will say that I think they probably would have won if he was on the team for this game. And this was a big game. New Orleans was two losses ahead of the Clippers. A Clippers win puts New Orleans only one loss ahead. It bumps New Orleans down a little bit. It keeps the Clippers up. If the Clippers had won this game, they would have been ahead of Oklahoma City in the loss column and tied with Minnesota, instead of just being only one game ahead of, you know, one loss, that is, ahead of 9th and 10th place Denver and Utah. So yeah, this was a big game that the Clippers, you know, could have really helped themselves by playing Tyrone Wallace. Again, not definitively that he would come in and change the result, but I think over the course of the last, I think 19 games that the Clippers have left, 17 games that the Clippers have left, Tyrone Wallace probably swings one or two of those games. So I think they absolutely need to get him up. But yeah, so this was a disappointing game all around, I think, for the Clippers. And, you know, you can lose a game. You can come in and New Orleans can outplay you. They can get hot. You can lose the game. It can happen. But I think it really burns to lose a game where you didn't play well, where, like, it was your own fault, where it was well within your control to win this game, and you lost. That burns with where they are in the playoff race right now. So that said, let's take a look around the NBA and see what's going on outside of Clipperland. So on Tuesday, aside from the Clippers losing, the Hornets and the Heat also lost, which kind of hurts the Detroit pick watch, because we want Charlotte to catch up with Detroit and we want Miami to further distance themselves and cement their playoff spot. But also on Tuesday, the Thunder lost to the Rockets and Denver was upset by the Dallas Mavericks. So two results that kind of help make up for the Clippers' disappointing loss to New Orleans. Then last night on Wednesday night, Detroit actually played one of their better all-around games since acquiring Blake Griffin, but that game came against the Toronto Raptors. They end up losing in overtime to the best team in the Eastern Conference, and the Lakers won last night against the Orlando Magic, which officially bumps the Detroit pick from 12th to 11th. So the Lakers now have a half-game advantage on the Pistons, and the Pistons have a one-game advantage on the Hornets. So obviously looking for the Lakers to grow that margin, lock themselves in at 12, and keep Detroit in the 10-11 battle with Charlotte, and then we would like for Charlotte to pass Detroit in the standings so that the Detroit pick ends up being 10th. Detroit right now is 5 losses at 29-36 behind Miami and Milwaukee, who are tied at 34-31. So I'm not quite ready to call the Pistons totally dead and out of the playoff race, because there's 17 games left, and I think the Pistons could easily get hot and do something like 12-5 in those games. I'm not saying they will, but I think there's a reasonable chance that it could happen. And if they get hot, I think, you know, I'm really not sold on the Miami Heat. I think it's really possible that they could do something and slide and go 500. And, you know, I mean, but it's close to being a done deal. Blake Griffin and his new team are kind of on life support at this point. In the Western Conference playoff race on Wednesday, the only significant loss, a few teams were in action and won their games, but the only significant loss was Denver losing to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Cleveland being the Clippers' opponent on Friday kind of makes you feel good that Cleveland won this game, so they won't come into the Clippers game angry or with as much of a sense of urgency. If you want to hear more about the Cavaliers, make sure you check in on tomorrow's podcast, the crossover podcast, with Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs. But suffice to say for right now that a win on Friday would be a big step in the right direction for the Clippers. So now tonight on Thursday night in the NBA, we want to keep our eyes on these games. Charlotte hosts the Brooklyn Nets. This is one of the easiest games left on Charlotte's schedule. Brooklyn is tanking, although I guess Brooklyn isn't really tanking because they don't have their own draft pick, but Brooklyn is plummeting in the standings, and this is a game that the Hornets need to win, one of their easier games remaining, so that they can keep pace with the Pistons. The Heat host the Sixers, which could be another loss for Miami. Philadelphia is playing kind of well recently. Miami, like I said, I'm not a big believer in them. But if Miami can win this game, it's a big help towards cementing their playoff spot ahead of the Pistons. The Wolves host the Celtics on TNT, so obviously we're looking for another Minnesota loss. It would tie the Wolves in the loss column with the Clippers, although the Wolves have played 4 more games than the Clippers and won all of them, so they'd be 38-29 compared to the Clippers 34-29. But still, it would further the Wolves slide without Jimmy Butler, and Minnesota's schedule is not getting any easier in the next couple of weeks. And then the Thunder are hosting the Suns. That should be an easy win for Phoenix, but obviously an upset would really help the Clippers because the Clippers and the Thunder are tied in the loss column with 29. And then probably the Spurs will pick up their 28th loss tonight as they visit the Golden State Warriors. Warriors 9-1 in their last 10 on a 6-game win streak. Spurs 3-7 in their last 10, struggling a little bit right now. I don't think the Spurs miss the playoffs, but they're, you know, still within that point right now where they potentially could, and it would obviously work to the Clippers' advantage to have any, if any of these teams, if Minnesota can slide, if Oklahoma City can slide, if San Antonio can slide, I think one of these six teams, at least, or of these eight teams competing for six spots, I think at least one of them is going to slide really badly and end up in 10th. And then we may have another team slide or two more teams slide, or we could have the rest of the teams kind of go par and finish with a really congested race with one team missing out. But I think one team that misses, at least one of the teams that doesn't make it, is going to miss because they slipped in the next month. It could very well be the Clippers with their difficult schedule coming up. But if San Antonio or Minnesota can keep sliding and slide out of the standings, that would be a, you know, it would be really nice to just get one team out of the way. So I'm definitely not ready to give San Antonio a pass yet, even though I do think that they ultimately should end up making it. That's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. As always, thank you for listening. And if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter at LucasJHan or email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Make sure you check out the Clips Nation blog at clipsnation.com and follow along on Twitter at ClipsNationSBN. Thank you guys for listening. This is Luke Sand signing off for Locked On Clippers.